Thanks for stopping by today for this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Lou Ann Crane, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. For the past 2 days now, we've been spending time with one of our all-time favorite guests, Dr. Meg Meeker. If you missed any of that discussion, I would strongly encourage you to listen in or even request a CD copy at drjamesdobson.org. We just covered so much fantastic advice for moms who not only want to raise strong, healthy kids, but who also want to enjoy their time while those children are still in the home. Those of us with teenagers and children in their 20s know how fast those years can go by. Dr. Meg Meeker has been practicing medicine for over 25 years and currently works alongside her husband, Walter. They have 4 adult children together. So as you can see, Dr. Meeker can truly call herself an expert on motherhood and family issues for many different reasons. We know you're anxious to hear what she had to say on this third and final part of our discussion. So let's get right to it now. Here on this Family Talk broadcast is our host, Dr. James Dobson.
Well, our guest again is Dr. Meg Meeker, a physician, a pediatrician, just a wonderful author that I have really come to enjoy. She has such practical advice on family life and on medicine and so many other subjects. She's written a book called The 10 Habits of Happy Mothers, Reclaiming Our Passion, Purpose, and Sanity. And we've done a couple of programs with her on this book, and we still haven't exhausted it. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you being back, and let's pick up where we left off last time.
Great. Thanks for having me back.
And Lou Ann, I've done a lot of talking in those other two programs. Why don't you take the first question?
Oh, doctor, I would be happy to. Dr. Meeker, you mentioned that you're working on writing a book about mothers and sons.
Yes.
As the mother of 3 sons, would you write that quickly, please?
Sure.
But in doing
you
so...
You have 3 of them.
I do, and I know that that's a very different relationship as they grow older. My place will undoubtedly change. And yet I was just intrigued. You've said in doing so, your research has been in talking with adult men about the impact their moms have on them. Give me some hope. What are you seeing?
Well, I love doing it because as a mom of a son who's now 20, I love hearing how men talk about their mothers. But what I'm hearing from men is that what they love and cherish in their mothers aren't the things that we are necessarily doing for them. We have the list of things that we feel we need to do as good moms. You know, we need to drive them, we need to feed them, we need to make sure they have this and this and this. But what sons cherish from their mothers is the belief that we communicate to them that they are strong, that they are capable, that they can be independent. Mm-hmm. They look to mothers to sort of teach them how to deal with their feelings and how to talk about their feelings. Younger boys in particular are a bit more comfortable talking to their moms about their feelings than they are with their dads. It's a vital role that they play. They talk about their mothers as being their security. One man said to me that my mother was my home, and this was a man who's in his 40s. And I asked him, what do you mean about that? He said, it's hard to describe. My mother was that secure place that I went to, you know, whenever I felt I was in trouble. And one gentleman said that it wasn't uncommon, and he had been in World War II, actually, so he's quite older. And he said it wasn't uncommon as men would die that they would cry out for their mothers. Mm-hmm. And as a mom of a 20-year-old son, that just really hit me. So there's a tie, a bind that a son has with his mother that's very primal, if you will. And yes, that changes. And yes, it feels like it breaks as a son matures into a man and marries a wife. But there's a rootedness to that bond that a son has with his mother that's very, very deep.
You've even said in your practice as a pediatrician that you've seen children physically relax and come at ease when mom walks in the room. Talk about the value that we hold.
Yes, yes. We have the ability to, like you said, to make our sons feel comforted and to feel warm and to be safe. Mothers, to many sons, they feel like the safe zone, the safe place. My mother will protect me. It's that mother hen kind of a thing. And particularly young sons can feel safer with their mothers than they can with their fathers. Sons respect and look up to their their dads, and they feel safe with their dads in a very different way.
You guys now, you know, there's an awful lot of people who say he's a mama's boy.
But now I'm talking about age specific. I'm talking about that boy who's between 1 and 10, when life is sort of all about mom. But as a young man begins to enter into adolescence, he emotionally needs to cut from his mother, and he seemingly turns against his mother because he now needs to turn towards his father and become a man. And a young adolescent boy can't seem to reconcile that I'm close with mom and I love my mom, but how can I do this? I need to be separate from my mom and live as a man. So I need to cut from her. Maybe you could articulate that better.
And talk about the fact that it precipitates conflict between sons and their mothers because he can't be a man as long as he is her boy, her baby. Mm-hmm. And so he precipitates fights with her as a way of establishing his identity. And a mother needs to recognize this not as rejection as lack of appreciation, but as a developmental process that goes on inside a male who is not female and knows he's not, and therefore he has to separate himself from his mother. And that happens during the adolescent years.
Yes. And that's when dad really comes into play. I said, dad's, you know, you're on from 10 to 20 or 10 to 18. Life for your son is all about you, because a young man has to see a good man to become a good man. And it can't be about his mother. And one of the things that happens, because I went through this with our son, I'll never forget it. It seemed that overnight he woke up and he hated me. And I couldn't do anything right. And I couldn't, you know, his dad was right about everything. I wasn't right. And I remember feeling very rejected. And then I stopped and I said, he needs to go through this. So my job as a good mom is to push him a little bit more and say, okay, you can figure this out. Mm-hmm. You've got a problem. You can do this. When my heart was saying, no, come here. I'll help you solve all your problems. I realized that was one of the worst things I could do for him.
Yeah, that's hard for a mother.
Very hard for a mother. And we are taught as mothers, and particularly single moms out there who may not have a husband in the home to help their sons navigate this, our heart says pull him closer because he's pulling away. If you want to keep him safe and not let him be in trouble, keep him connected, keep him close. But in fact, that's not what we're supposed to do. Mm. We need to stand beside and beneath our sons, but we need to let them stand on their feet so they can claim their manhood and claim their power, if you will.
That is so helpful. So in a very real way, so if I have a teenage son and he comes up to me and I kind of know he's wrestling with an issue, one of the things I might do is, even though I know the answer or want to give the lecture, to take a step back and say, what do you think?
Yep.
What are you thinking about
this?
Talk
to your dad about it.
Talk to your dad about it.
Yeah. Or even say, I mean, I've heard women say to their sons, you know, I'm not really sure, but I know you're going to figure it out.
Yes,
and that
exactly.
confidence that
yes,
we place in
yes,
them.
Yes. We take a son's power away by trying to fix all of his problems and answer everything. But when we look to them and say, you know, I don't know the answer, but you'll find the answer. Mm. God will help you find the answer. So I'm going to pray for you about that, or I'm going to help you in any way I can, but you can figure this out, you know. And it's a very hard thing for a mother to do, because we want to swoop in and make things nice and easy for our sons. But it's a very, very important step, is to stand back and tell them they can do something.
And help him build those independent thinking skills that'll benefit him when he's out on his own and headed off to college. That brings up another point. I really think it helps to look ahead to the future. I mean, I parent my 15-year-old a whole lot differently than I did the one who's 22 now, because I've seen some of those rewards, Dr. Meeker. At the other end, my son in college, who is a senior in college, called me the other night and asked for my advice about something. Yeah. And I didn't think much of it, because that's what we've come to. And I was telling that to another woman, and she actually stopped. She goes, whoa, really?
Yeah.
He called and asked you, and I thought, she has no idea that there will be a reward on the other end. All she sees is all this hard work in junior high right now. Yeah. And I think it's important for those of us who have older sons to rise up and say that. Hang in.
Yeah.
Hang in there.
And if you as a mom provide all the answers before they're requested or even recognized— then you push him away.
You do
say that.
I mean, he does. He wants to be separate from you.
Well, Hannah, he'll resent you, and he'll it'll feel creepy to him. Mm-hmm. It'll just feel creepy. You know?
Well, is it the whole scriptural basis of a man needs respect? It's basically what it is, isn't it,
when
doctor?
I became a man, I put away childish things.
Yeah,
you know. Meg, I would really like to see you write another book, a companion to this one, about girls and their mothers, because there's a lot of conflict there, too, as you go through the adolescent years. And it's two women in the kitchen kind of thing.
And, yeah. Oh, it's
you
tough.
Know what I'm talking
I do.
About.
I mean, I have three daughters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always held on to what you were talking about, Luann. I said, you know, I've said this to patients. Your job as a good parent is to raise a healthy 25-year-old. So if you have a 16-year-old that's giving you fits, you're not there. So hang on, plow through. And just like I did with our very strong-willed eldest daughter, we just plow through. And you realize you're in it for the long haul, and you may have a year or two that's pretty bumpy, but it's not always going to be that way. And I think we feel like we got to get it fixed right now and get the right answer, or we're going to blow it for eternity. We're not.
Yeah, you know? The feeling is that we could never be good friends. But in fact, you may be best friends with the kid that has argued with you over everything.
But it's not going to come to the 25. But you will get there. But if you try to get there too fast and too soon, which all parents do when their kids are adolescents, because they say, if I just keep him talking, we just keep friends and we just stay close. Moms are big on that with their kids. And I keep giving advice and talking stuff and don't let them separate, then life will be okay. But it's really the exact opposite. You got to let them stand on their own and cut and be independent and strengthen them, and then you can be friends later.
Hormones have a whole lot to do with this,
lot,
too.
Yeah. They do.
So much of what you're talking about is just that confidence that we exude. One other area I'd really like to explore with you, Dr. Meeker, is this whole concept of women and friendships.
Yes.
And that's kind of tied in even to something we talked about last time with the competitive spirit, which is really preventing us from having strong friendships with one another. And I think I read where you really say that the first step in annihilating that is just to admit it.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
You even did. Truth be told, we're being vulnerable here.
Yeah.
You had kind of a competitive edge with some of your girlfriends.
Exactly. Exactly. And we naturally do that, particularly Christian women. If we walk into church or we walk into a Bible study and we see a woman who's well put together and well dressed and her kids are behaving well, we assume she's more godly than we are, which means she must pray a lot more than we do, you know, and so she's closer to God than we are. So it starts right the moment we look at another woman. We're just wired that way, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it takes a concerted effort to stop ourselves and say, why are we doing that? No, I don't care how much she weighs. I don't care what her hair color is. I don't care what her relationship with Christ is like relative to what mine is like. I'm okay the way I am, you know, and to stop that competitive spirit and the competitive thinking. And that's something we really can do. And that will go a long way in building stronger relationships with women friends.
How do I know if I'm thinking that way, though? Give me some ways to gauge that.
Well, if you're feeling jealousy or if you're feeling animosity towards another woman, there's nothing wrong with, if it's a close friendship, to say, you know, I'm so jealous that your kids don't give you the hard time that my kids give me. You know, and chances are that woman's going to look at you, and I'm so glad to hear you say, because I've always looked at you, and, you know, you lost that last 10 pounds, and I never could. And you can start to laugh about things, because it's just like when Scripture says, when you bring things into the light, really the power goes away, doesn't it? It sort of dispels the mystery, and you can deal with them, and then they begin to go away.
Meg, you said in your book, 10 Habits of Happy Mothers, you told a story about driving to work one day. You talk about being vulnerable. This one I can't believe you put in there. But there was another woman in another car going to the same place.
Yes.
And you wound up racing her.
And did I say in the book that I was pregnant at the time? Oh. I really had lost my mind. In the title, and it says Regaining Our Sanity, the sanity part's for me. I was a young resident, and I was very competitive. I was at a pediatric hospital, a large hospital. I loved being a pediatric resident. My husband was at home taking care of our daughter, and I was pregnant with our second daughter. And it was very early in the morning, and I was driving down the highway, and I saw out of the corner of my eye my colleague, another woman who wasn't pregnant, speeding past me. And I pretended not to see her. So I just hit the gas a little bit more and I sped up. So I inched in front of her and then I saw her inch and she sped up. And we had truly a speeding contest down the highway that neither one of us would admit because we wouldn't acknowledge that we were both doing it. And I don't remember which one of us got to the hospital sooner, but we raced to the hospital because we wanted to be the first one to get to rounds because we wanted to edge out the other mother. And I stopped and I was walking in the hospital. I thought, what were you doing? First of all, I was taking my child's life in my hands. I was pregnant. Right. So that was insane thing number one, you know. And here I was competing with a good friend of mine, and she's still a good friend. She's a wonderful pediatrician, a great mom. And over what? You know, why? Who cares if she got to rounds 5 minutes before I did or I did? It really didn't matter. But that's that competitive nature. And once we let the competitive juices flow and we don't stop them, it leads us to do really crazy, harmful things. And there's no reason for it. It didn't make me a happier mother. It didn't make me a happier pediatrician. It certainly didn't bring us closer as friends. And I haven't spoken to her about it to this day, so she may read about it in the book. But
and remember,
that's how insane we can be as mothers, because that competitive spirit is very strong in us.
Well, and the very essence of competition implies that someone wins and
someone loses.
And really, that's a stark statement to come to grips with. Do I really want to look at you across the other side of the room and say, I want you to lose so that I can win? No, we really don't.
And when we come to the point where we say, I don't need to win, even at this mom thing, I don't need to win in my mind's eye, God will help me do just what I'm supposed to do with my kids at each moment. And I have faith and confidence in that, so I don't need to compete with anyone. You know, that's real freedom, Luann. That's real freedom. And that opens up our relationships with other women to be friends with them, because how can we be competitive with another woman and grow a strong friendship? And the truth is, we really need women friends. Women friends help us have stronger marriages because it takes pressure and heat off our husbands. We can talk to our women friends about issues that we don't need to talk to our husbands about because they're on a different wavelength anyway. We need women friends to encourage us, to help us, to give us food, to pick up our kids, to pick us up when we've fallen down. You know, we need them to be there when our kids are born. We need them to be there when our husbands die. So we need women friends. And one of the most important steps we can take to strengthening those friendships, stop the competition.
What about the woman who says, but Meg, I don't have any friends. You don't understand. I live out in the middle of nowhere and I would love to have the relationship you're talking about. Where do I start?
You know, I hear that a lot from women, particularly busy mothers, younger mothers, say, I would love to have friends, but I don't have time for friends. To have one woman friend is really, really important to your emotional health. And that's one of the best gifts you can give your kids, as an emotionally healthy mom. So if you're a mom with young children and you feel you don't have time, ask a friend if you can talk to her for 15 minutes every other week. You can find time 15 minutes every other week. If you live out in the country, try to have friends just by talking to them on the cell phone. Technology can be a great thing. Email isn't the best. Facebook is okay. You know, it's not a healthy substitute for face-to-face time. But you really need to make an effort to reach out and at least talk with another woman at least once a week for your own sanity.
Let me ask you one more question. Could it be a family member, or do you suggest that it really should be someone outside of your
family? Oh, no, it doesn't need to be anybody outside. It can be an adult child, someone 25 or over. It could be a sister. It can be a mother. It doesn't have to be a woman your own age. I've had some very close friends who are 25, 30 years older than I am, and I think those kinds of friendships are invaluable. And so there are all sorts of women out there longing for a friend, just like you're longing for a friend, because God creates us to be in relationship. So if we don't have a healthy woman relationship, God will help us find one somewhere.
You know, Meg, 100 years ago, women did a lot of things together. They washed clothes down at the creek together. And when a woman had a baby, grandmothers and aunts came in to help her. There was a lot of communality between women that's been lost.
Yes.
And I'm sure you would agree that when a woman kind of stays to herself all day and waits for her husband to come home, puts demands on him, she may not say it, but they're there, that he can't meet.
Mm-mm.
Because a man cannot meet all of a woman's needs.
No,
he can't. I wish everybody knew that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them he can meet and should meet, but there are others that she really needs to get in fellowship with a woman. There are things she can say to a woman she couldn't even say to her husband.
Exactly. A good woman friend knows everything about you and accepts everything about you and will speak truth to you no matter how painful. Mm. You know, that's what the good women friends in my life do for me. They are just blunt and honest. And I go to them and I ask them, am I right? Am I wrong? Am I too self-centered? Am I selfish? Am I acting out of love? What is it all about? Mm. But women need other women. And it's a lot of work. And I do worry because I think that young mothers are profoundly lonely. And loneliness is a killer. You know, working mothers particularly work outside the home and then come home and care for the kids. The first thing they cut is time with other women because they feel it's being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
But we need time with other women because you're absolutely right. That community that we used to have, I remember 20 years ago, walking one of my kids in a neighborhood we just moved into, and I felt this sadness come over me because I didn't see one other person walking in our neighborhood, and it was house after house after house. And I thought, everybody's gone and working. Nobody's here. There are no friends. And this real sense of real loneliness was very hard. And God gives us that loneliness to tell us we need women and we need friends. So we need to work at it.
Well, Doctor, I was with you until you made me go wash clothes at the creek, so I don't really know if I want to do that.
There was a time. There was a washboard. You don't even know anything about that.
I know what it is, but really, I'm thinking that the initiative here might need to be with an older woman, if I can say that.
Yes.
Because you've talked about the ones that are kind of housebound, and it really might be somebody who is
Titus II woman.
Titus II woman, absolutely.
You know, to make that first effort.
Yes.
And not be turned off. It might take two or three or four times, but we have to be vulnerable and reach out and at least try and let that person know, I've got time for you. I'm going to make time for you. You're important to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, that leads me to think there are many, many women in elderly women who are in nursing homes who have very clear minds, but for some reason, and they're very lonely and they have so much wisdom and love to give other women. And I know this because my dad was in a nursing home the last 4 years of his life, and I got to know some of the women there. And they were amazing women. One woman would wheel her wheelchair and stop in front of every patient's door. And I saw this day after day after day, and I thought, oh, she's just kind of a crazy lady. What's happening? You know how we do. We pass judgment. One day I went over and I said, excuse me, Gloria, you know, can I ask what you're doing? And she said, yes. She looked up and she said, I stop and I pray for everybody in the room every day. Wow. Now, that's a woman I missed out on knowing for an entire year because I looked at her and thought, she's kind of a crazy lady. What does she have to say to me? She had her full faculties, but she couldn't walk. And there's so many wonderful women out there. We need to just take the effort to go out and find them. And they have so much love to give us younger women.
The book is 10 Habits of Happy Mothers, Reclaiming Our Passion, Purpose, and Sanity. This is the book that you really ought to get. It's written by Dr. Meg Meeker, and she is working on some other books that we've been talking about today. And I do hope you'll come and be with us and talk about those subjects when you get them finished. It's always a pleasure talking to you. One of these times, I'd like you to bring your husband with you because you obviously think he's a pretty good guy.
He's a great guy. I've surely enjoyed our time together, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, we hope this Family Talk conversation with Dr. Meg Meeker has brought you some helpful advice and, most importantly, some encouragement, particularly for you moms. If you'd like to get a copy of our guest's book, all of us here at Family Talk would highly recommend it. Again, the title is The 10 Habits of Happy Mothers, and you can find that at drjamesdobson.org. Also there, you'll find Dr. Meeker's fabulous book for dads. It's called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, which Dr. Dobson actually referred to a number of times in his own work, Bringing Up Girls. Again, you can find all of these titles at drjamesdobson.org. And while you're at that website or on our new Family Talk app, would you consider making a donation to our work? I promise we will do our best to steward wisely what is given and put it to good use in helping families. If you'd prefer to give over the phone, you can do that as well. The number is 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. Thanks for spending these 3 days with us and with Dr. Meg Meeker, and we hope you'll make plans to join us next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.